Hey everyone, welcome back to all my listeners. This is episode number 12 of season 8. Today is Wednesday, March 22nd, 2023. My name is Sonal Patel, and this is the Paint the Medical Picture podcast series. Now, I hope everyone's doing okay. I know, it's tax time. It's just around the corner, right? And I know it's never any fun for anybody. And all of my March Madness brackets busted very early this year on like day 3. So watching those games on TV have not been any fun for me either. But I did have some good news, right? As I looked down at the calendar and it does say spring. It does say spring. So that brings me some joy. But as I drive around town, there are still multiple snowbanks, right, around every street corner, and the majority of parking lots have these huge snowbanks that still need to melt. So I know they will be gone in the weeks ahead. So that's something I can look forward to. Then I also did get a chance to spend some time over this past weekend looking at art. It's been a hot minute since I've gone to a gallery or the Art Institute of Chicago, but I did get a chance to do that and got my fix. So that brought me a lot of joy. And then, of course, I've been busy over these past couple of weeks planning for multiple trips that I'm planning on taking for a variety of speaking engagements that I'm giving later in the year, as well as I've been planning for multiple big birthday adventures later this year, my own big birthday that I'm having, as well as some of my bestest and longest of childhood friends. We're all sharing these big birthdays later this year. So planning lots of trips for that. And, you know, I'm sure this happens to all of you guys out there too. You have those types of friends, right? Those types of long childhood friends that you have. And when you see them again, it's like you just pick up like it was yesterday when you saw them, right? Despite the fact that they live around the world, there are different time zones involved, right? We all have different jobs and different families and kids and partners and whatever, right? But when we reunite again, it's like time has stood still and nothing has changed, right? It's an amazing feeling. So that definitely brought me some happiness. All right, you guys, let's get into today's session. So, you know, this one is going to be another terrific, newsworthy interview share that I wanted to provide my audience with. I had a fantastic conversation with my good friend, Betty Hovey, who you all know now, because she was on my podcast in season 6, and she's been on time and time again after that through our shared interviews on one another's platforms, right? So we recently discussed a session on her platform called Healthcare Happenings on audit planning. And as we were discussing in this conversation together, we came up with a great idea, and we're going to be sharing a small series on healthcare audits. So I want you guys to tune in for all of that. I know I will be sharing our conversations on my podcast as well. But in this particular show today, I'm going to be providing you with the details on our conversation together on audit planning. And then, of course, all of my trusty tips and our recommendations are going to be regarding the importance of getting your ducks in a row and planning your audits. So stay tuned for that as well. And then, of course, I'm going to be rounding out today's episode in Spark with a remarkable quote on creativity by Jack White. If you guys have checked me out on LinkedIn, you know I'm all about compliance and protecting our physicians and our valued healthcare professionals when it comes to the business of medicine. I hope this week with me brings you enough to take back to your organizations to want to dive in deeper, to use my tips and best practices to ensure success. I hope this podcast will help you boost the quality of documentation capture and improve coding accuracy as you help all your providers paint the medical picture. If you like what you're hearing, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button now so you don't miss another episode. Please write in a review and kindly drop me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to my podcast. I'd really love your support. And as always, a friendly disclaimer. Remember, I'm bringing you the news, current healthcare industry news, my compliance tips and my compliance recommendations based on my over 12 years of experience in front office, in back end, in coding, and in billing for multi-specialty physicians, in compliance, and in auditing for both E&M and surgical operative reports. These are my opinions alone and are not to be construed as legal advice. Today's episode is sponsored by Advanced Coding Services, a leading medical billing and medical coding school in the United States. Whether you're just starting out or a seasoned professional, our training equips you with the tools and support you need to advance your career. Our medical billing and coding school meets your needs worldwide online or in person with one-on-one support throughout your training. We are committed to helping our alumni and credentialed medical community in keeping up their certifications by offering various avenues for acquiring your continuing education units. In addition to our Mastering the Business of Medicine retreats offered several times throughout the year in different parts of the country, we now offer memberships. You can conveniently earn your CEUs by attending our exclusive members-only webinars. Since our aim is to nurture and grow the careers of individuals who work in the business of medicine, we call our member area the Apple Orchard. Advanced Coding Services, educate, nurture, inspire, reaching back with a hand up.
Hey y'all, happy Baby Friday. I am very pleased to welcome my good friend again back here with us, Sonal Patel of SP Collaborative. Hope y'all are all having a good week. Hey Sonal, how you doing?
Hey my friend, good. Hanging in there, right? Yes. It's almost the end of the week, so.
Why I like Baby Friday. It just gets you one, you're saying Friday, you know?
Exactly. We're tiptoeing into the weekend, right? It's perfect.
Well, welcome to this session of Healthcare Happenings. Before we get started on our topic today, while people are coming in and you know, saying hey to each other, and I see ladies already there with us. So hey lady.
And we'd love
Andrea
to see you here.
Taylor.
Awesome.
Yes. I was looking around, you know, how I get my little notices on different things when I put up posts and stuff. And one that I looked at and I'm kind of a little sad about, because it's a little shameful for us down here, but they put out a listing of the 10 most overweight and obese metro areas in the United States.
Oh.
And the top 10 of them are all from the South. So we've got number one, McAllen, Edinburgh, and Mission, Texas. So those Texans with the barbecue. Number two is Memphis, Tennessee.
More barbecue.
Number three, Mobile, Alabama. Number four, Knoxville, Tennessee. Number five, Jackson, Mississippi. Six, we got Chattanooga. So we had a Tennessee up there a couple times. In Arkansas at number seven, we got Little Rock, North Little Rock and Conway, Shreveport in Louisiana and Bossier City, and then Birmingham and Hoover, Alabama at number nine, and number 10 is Columbia, South Carolina. So for those of us in those cities, maybe do a few more walks.
I know, it's so hard. It's been winter though, right? So I think now folks have more incentive to enjoy the good weather and get all their steps in for sure.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, everybody start doing a little thing. And yeah, Amanda, so that comfort food, that's exactly right. All the good barbecue and fried stuff. We fry everything down here. I mean, I have fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches when I was a kid. And if you have never tried it, y'all.
Never had it fried.
Oh my God,
yum.
Awesome. Yummy. Because the peanut butter melts.
Tasty.
It is like the best. It's the
tasty.
Best. So fried biscuits, fried cornbread. I mean, you can fry anything. So as we all know from going to county fairs, where
county
they fry
fairs,
covered
yes.
chocolate bacon.
Twinkies, Oreos. Yes.
And Holly says the food is too good in Tennessee for sure. Yep.
Nice.
All right. So on to our subject today. I was looking and we're talking about different things and Somal and I were discussing audits is something that both of us with our companies and then, you know, together look at doing is audits for, you know, our clients. And I've noticed and talking to people that, you know, they're not always one experience when they know they need the audit and they ask us to audit, they don't know the audit steps, you know? So when I'm asking them for things, they didn't understand, well, why do you need this record or why do you need that record? And in some offices, if they have the staff, and they have the bandwidth, I know they can do some internal checks themselves, you know? So I think you need to have a good plan of action when you're going to do these things. Plus for your compliance program, you know, those things should be stated out. You know, do you agree with that, Sonal?
Completely agree with that. Absolutely. We need to be able to understand what it is we want to look at and why we want to look at those items, right? And that's a really, really good point that you made, that those things should be clearly outlined in some sort of a compliance plan and larger program that you have for your practice. And sadly, I know that you and I over the years have seen far too many of our smaller private practices that simply go without, you know. Yes. So, you know, that's where a lot of the pitfalls can happen. And like you were saying, that's where the questioning comes in. Like, how do we do this? Like, how do we now look at the things that we haven't been paid on, right? Like, why haven't those items been paid on? Or why is there something being considered as an overpayment? What does that mean, right? So, yeah, there's so many issues when it comes to auditing and auditing plans.
Yes. Well, and the one thing, again, to play off what you said that made me think, you know, with about the cost of it, you know, they just forego things. Mm-hmm. And I do get a lot of clients that they come to me when now they're getting the letters and the payer's wanting large amounts of money to take back.
Right,
now they're
right.
coming to me saying, oh my gosh, the fee is going to be different for me helping them get out of that kind of trouble than it would be if I would have just done a regular audit on them, you know? And that's why, you know, you want to do those regular checks because everybody's looking at everybody's stuff, you know? So you need to make sure you know what's going on in your house before somebody starts asking you for stuff. And you don't have to go to like a large consulting firm that's, you know, charging $15,000 and $20,000 to look at 10 records or something where you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, that's where private smaller consultants like Sonal, myself, Christine Hall, Terry Fletcher, that's where, you know, you can go with a firm like that, one of us, that can do it at a reasonable cost. And make sure you're staying on track. Like me, for my clients, I have them on like a subscription plan. So I, you know, set them up with so many audits during the year, you know, every quarter, every whatever, to where maybe it's not even as many records. So it's not either time consuming for the practice either to like get things. And then they just pay a monthly fee for that. So it's not like, you know, I have to come up with $40,000, you know, by, you know, next week when she's finished with this kind of thing. So there's many different ways, you know, that, you know, you can get these things done to where it's not going to be like you got to take out a loan to do it, right? But you have to, you know, get in contact with people like Sonal, myself, and others to kind of see what kind of things they offer because you never know, you know. And I'm sure Sonal, when you work with things, you're obviously we're not going to be charging the same fees that, you know, one of those big kind of firms is going to, that's got 500 employees that they're trying to pay for.
Right. Exactly. You said so many amazing things in your comments. Where can I start from? So
am I rambling?
No. You said so much that makes sense, right? In terms of cost. So I agree with you completely that there's a different viewpoint when it comes to our providers coming in for help after the fact, right? After they received that overpayment request demand letter, right? That cost is much higher because oftentimes from my previous experience before I went out on my own working with attorneys, right? Once you get an attorney involved, that also escalates your cost, right? And then when they have to hire out consultants and other types of auditors to help them assist, right, in their legal representation, all of that cost is incurred. So I agree with you completely. I'm big on this, on my platforms and my philosophy in general, that we have to start looking at auditing as preventive care for your practice, right?
Oh, that's great.
Very similar to preventive care for the human body, right? That's your expertise. That's your wheelhouse as practitioners. But in terms of what our expertise is, it's that preventive care for the business of medicine, right? We want to help you before the payer starts to look at these volume of issues that they identify, because they do have access to your CPT codes and all of your modifiers, right? And I always love to remind my providers and clients that it's your data. You actually have that data as well. So you should start looking at it. You should make a productivity report, run a report at the end of each month to outline all of your codes that you have built out, right? And have your internal audit team, if you have one, identify any of those big glaring issues. Like hypothetically, we can talk about the big bad boy modifier 25, right? If you have a lot of that, perhaps that could be a part of your objective for the month. Like, let's go ahead and pull a few of those claims with modifier 25 and see if that was actually appropriately appended for that date of service, right? For that patient, for that particular minor surgery that you happen to use, right? So things like that can really go a long way in terms of keeping your compliance budget under control if you do things in the beginning. That's what I always like to advise. If we get in beforehand, before the payers start looking, it's going to go a long way. And then hopefully you won't get as many of those overpayment demands, right?
You're not sweating it.
You're not sweating it. Like, oh, I know I have this because I've already done my work. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause nobody, I see that thing out where people use that for a while with, at conferences. I don't know if you were, it was like bulletproof this and
bulletproof or whatever. Documentation.
Nobody's bulletproof. It's not, you know, and
it's
and
a nice title,
they can always find something, you know, and nobody's perfect. So nobody expects you to be perfect, you know? So, but you also, you know, I mean, my worst case scenario, and I remember telling you about this, Sonal, was I did get a call from an attorney, and he was calling on behalf of his client who had gotten the letters, and he had told me he like had put this off 3 or 4 times already, and now the due date, this was on a Friday, and the response was no later due than Monday. And they were not going to give him any more extensions because he had already extended it 4 times and they just didn't know what to do. So they just ignored it. You know, I mean, you don't want to be in that situation. Yes, I helped him out, but I mean, I had to work all weekend. And so they paid for that and they paid dearly for that, you know, so don't put yourself in a situation like that. you know, get something like this where you've got a plan together and you go through and you follow it. And, mm-hmm. you know, then things aren't going to be as scary.
Exactly.
But so we wanted to first kind of go through steps. And our first thing was, you know, so why do we want to audit? You know, one of the big reasons on my side, you know, one, to protect yourself, but two, you know, the government says you have to. You know, here's a link here for the roadmap for new physicians. And I know that a lot of people on here, you know, you might not be working with new physicians, but I still encourage y'all to go here and download this. This is on the OIG website. It's like 8-10 pages. I don't know. It's not really that long, but it goes through all different things about, you know, Stark and how to check the HIEs, the exclusions, and this. And it just has like one little kind of page. It also has a PowerPoint presentation, and it has a transcript for the PowerPoint presentation that kind of goes through this roadmap. And on one of the pages of this roadmap, it talks about the compliance program. And I remember years ago when they first started coming out with all the compliance program requirements, it was all for hospitals and big, right. large practices. And they recommended mm-hmm. for small and individual practices that they take a look at making a compliance program. And that's what stuck. I'm still finding that's what stuck in all of those small group and individual docs heads, mm-hmm. because every time I ask, I'm sad to say this. One client, almost every client I've ever asked doesn't have a compliance program, because they say, well, we don't need one. They right. still don't know they need one.
Because they said it was recommended. Right. Yeah. Right.
But when the Affordable Care Act came out in 2010,
that's right.
And that's why I like this roadmap, because if your doctor's like, oh, you know what, you can show them this from the OIG. It says if you take Medicare or Medicaid, you have to have a compliance program. I don't care what your size is.
That's
so,
right.
So that's a requirement. So it's please, you know, make sure you're looking at compliance programs. And that's something else. If you don't have the bandwidth, you know, you need to go outside, you know, and for small practices, it's not going to have to be, you know, three ring binders that are 500 pages each. You know, they don't expect you to have, you know, volumes and volumes and stuff, you know, a small, you know, online have stuff, you know, I mean, it can be easily done, but make sure you get it done, because a friend of mine that's an attorney went to a conference recently, and he told me that it was with OIG and it, you know, for those, and they said that they had gotten billions of dollars back in fines for practices not having compliance programs last year. So it's kind of one of those things where if they look at your stuff, they might go, hey, by the way, let me right. see your compliance program, and right. you better have one. Right. So right. you have to do it. And as part of the compliance program, one of the elements is that you audit and monitor. So here is the website that shows you the compliance program for individual and small group practices. It's the piece out of the Federal Register is where it sends you, that lists out all the things you have to do. And Sonal, I'll get your, you know, take on these things. And while you're doing that, I'll copy and paste these links into the chat for people, so that, you know, they can pick it up that way too. So, you know, if you want to kind of go on this area of where in the compliance program, it states that, you know, this is something that's got to be done.
Right. So speaking of that, it's mandatory, right? So that federal regulation, you can find it at 42 CFR 422.503, as well as 422.504. So it's a simple fact. Like, we have to have a compliance program at your practice. And it has to be something that, like Betty was saying, it needs to be yours, right? It needs to be something that's individualized to your practice. So having said that, It absolutely does not need to be some 300-page, really fancy worded document. No, right? It has to be something that's understandable for you and your staff to be able to, you know, peruse through all the time. And for people like us in compliance, we want to make sure that, you know, it's okay to identify internally that there was some issue that you found, right? There was some little red flag that was identified. And if you simply document the fact that you identified it on this date and you took the corrective steps to make sure that the resolution was made internally, that's a beautiful thing. And I don't think you would ever be found at fault there, right? Because you've identified it, you've cleaned it up, and you've documented when all of that stuff occurred. So I really do think it's imperative to not be scared of developing a compliance plan and greater program. And I know I've written many compliance plans over my years for various specialties. And again, it needs to be individualized, right? So even though you can find things online that are like, I don't know, $19.99, they're all pretty much generic. And if you make the mistake of simply paying $19.99 and never changing it from, you know, Acme Doctor's Practice, like, we're going to know that that's not even your name. Like, you are not Acme Doctor's Practice, right? We have to individualize things and put your location on that document, as well as all of your staff that are employed there, right? And so over the years, people are going to leave. Which means, again, that's where it's a great time to make changes, right? Change who the new doctors have come in, the new PAs have come in, your new personnel staff that have come in. All of those things are important. All of the operations type of compliance is also required. So not just that additional piece of ensuring that the coding and the billing, the auditing and the, you know, looking at claims is documented somewhere in your compliance program, it's going to change from time to time over the months and the years. So yeah, it's really, really important to start looking at those links that we provided in all of the comments, because the OIG does a really great job over all of these years of providing their roadmaps and their toolkits for you to use, right? They want you to go ahead and make sure that you slowly implement the 7 compliance program plan elements into your own practice and make them individualized. So yeah, we really can't stress that enough. It's so important to develop one.
Yes, I have a client that I was discussing, because this is something now, since I've had so many clients kind of go, we don't need that. I bring it up with every client. Yeah. And I recently had one that told me, we have that. We do have one. And I said, okay, that's good. And I said, are you sure that it covers the elements? You know, so I went through and it came back, and he said, the doctor said, you know, it's just, we got it, you know, online, and it's, and I said, okay. So, well, did you customize it?
Right.
What do you mean? Well, the policies, the, you know, they have to be ones that pertain to your practice with your information. He said, well, I'll check with the office manager. And then we had to have like a call together, because she's like, well, we have it. And he's like, yeah, but it's not customized. So, you know, they had not gone into it to make it. So it's worse to have one and have it be like that, to where they're like, well, then you just ignore it. So you're just using it as window dressing to say you've got one. So that's not really that good. So, you know, make sure if you're looking at those other things, like I said, you know, and Sonal said that, you know, and regulations change, you know, we don't have the same rules all the time. So when the rules change, you got to go back to the compliance program, look in the plan. That should be part of your yearly end of year stuff that you do in a practice, is always go back to that and see, any of the rules that have changed that are old, that are whatever, that you start to move those out and put the new ones in there. It is a living, breathing part of the practice. You know, it's not a one and done, put it up on the shelf and nobody has to worry about it anymore kind of thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like our pandemic has, you know, hopefully made a lot of our compliance programs get tweaked, right? We needed to include our COVID somewhere in there, and all of the telehealth factors that played in, right? So there's always change in the greater healthcare landscape, not just your own personal, right? It's the whole thing that will trickle down and affect each and every practice. And this pandemic has been a great, great example of it. Yeah.
I just want lady caught on. Yes, lady. Acme is on the Looney Tunes cartoon.
Oh, good. You like that reference? Perfect.
So, yes. We should be doing them. Part of the compliance program is auditing and monitoring, which means that you should be looking at things. So, you know, the next question is then, okay, now how do we want to do it? Because there's different ways that you can do an audit. You know, they can either be internal or external. First of all, you know, like how are you going to proceed with it? And depending on the size of your practice and the expertise of your staff, you know, they may be great coders, but maybe haven't audited before. Or if you think about it, I had one practice that got in a little bit of trouble because they came to me through an attorney. And he said that these guys started getting letters. And so we got into it. And I said, well, you know, were they doing, when was their last audit? That's one of the questions I always ask. When was the last time they looked at stuff? And he says, well, they said that they were getting audits repetitively, like every quarter. And I'm like, and their audits were all okay? And he was like, yeah, they said that they all, you know, they were all always passing. Everything was fine. I said, all right. So we had a conference with the practice and I was talking to them. And it turns out they were doing internal audits. And the person that was doing the internal audits was also the person that was their coder. And I said, okay, well, hold on a minute. You know, let's think this through. If you're checking yourself,
right,
chances are you're going to say you're right.
Yeah. I'm going to give myself a gold star every time. Yeah.
And she was no longer with the practice.
Right.
So that was the second thing. It wasn't like they could go say, hey, what's going on here? She was gone.
Right.
So it's never really valid to check your own stuff. I mean, everybody wants to say they'll be on the honor system, but also if you don't know something isn't correct, if you check yourself, you're still not
going to know. It's still not correct. Right. So, exactly. You lose that objectivity with an internal auditor. You definitely, we always recommend that you inside protect yourselves and look at what you're doing, right? Absolutely. But as the auditor on the external side, right, we definitely do recommend that you require that level of objectivity, which you can receive from somebody on the outside. I know I've seen plenty of practices provide their prior audit details, Betty.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever told you this, and I'm going to share it with you here, but I don't think those audits were ever as comprehensive as they should have been, right? They were very superficial audits. So when I looked, when they provided me with all of that documentation, well, by all, I'm quoting again, right? It was very skimpy. Like all they looked at was incredibly superficial. They didn't ask for more information, right? It was very, very loose. And so again, like you were saying, the audits were all passing, right? So you need to be able to do a deeper dive, right? And cross-check against your individual payers as well when you do an audit, not just a blanket, let me just do a CPT code audit and, you know, refuse to even look at who the claim was billed to, right? That's the most important piece of the puzzle. is the reimbursement piece, right? So who is the payer? Let me research around and find what their payer policy is on this particular service. And let me see if criteria was even met. So there's much more that goes into a deep dive type of an audit that you can get from an external, much more objective auditor or auditing company or auditing team of people. Yeah, but I just wanted to throw those 2 cents in there for objective is key.
Yeah. So if you have a larger practice and you have multiple people in the coding department, maybe you have somebody that's designated as an auditor, or that's where great. If they separate physicians, you know, mm-hmm. they cross do mm-hmm. each other's.
That's great.
You know, and I think internal people are really good for like those spot checks on things. If you say, you know, I noticed that, you know, this is on the OIG work plan. Why don't we pull 5 records and take a look at them? You know, that's not the kind of stuff external. You can't go external for all that kind of stuff. It's like little bitty stuff that by the time it takes mm-hmm. you to go through everything,
right.
you know?
Right.
So there it's really good for spot checking things. I really mm-hmm. think that. But when you're doing like the deeper dive, as you wonderfully put it, Sonal, you really need to have somebody too from the outside that's got the time, because you think mm-hmm. about your time factor too at the practice.
Exactly.
If the staff is already underwater, and then on top of it, you're going to now add an audit that, you know, is going for them to do a good job, is going to take them a while to look through everything. Then they're just going to get more and more underwater. So, you know, you have to look at it from that aspect too, in how it's going to affect the practice and how the practice runs. So that's the first thing. And the next thing would be attorney-client privilege, right?
Absolutely.
Now, as you're had a heavier side working with those, is there comments about attorney-client privilege, like pros and cons, that you want to go ahead first with?
Yeah, so attorney-client privilege, that's a big one, right? And especially where I came from. So yeah, when providers and practices are reaching out to the attorney, right? Based on their conversations, right? And they want to use people like me, you know, how do we go about navigating that, right? How are we protecting the work that we're doing together, right? So if someone else ever had to come in and ask for these communications that we're having together, we want those things to be privileged, right? To best defend the provider or the practice. So that's what we mean by the term attorney-client privileged, right? So those are the types of instances where you can write that on a communication and it actually be valid, right? You can't just write the term attorney-client on every email that you send out just because you feel like it. No, that's not protected because there's no attorney involved or whatever, right? You just think you're protecting
somebody that did that.
Yeah, I've seen that too. So I'm like, no, it doesn't quite work like that. But along this theme, I wanted to just share something that just a few words. I don't want to give it all away. But when I was at the NAMIS conference in December, I attended a conference from the esteemed and amazing attorney Robert Lyles.
Oh, he's wonderful.
He's incredible.
Yeah, that was a good session.
Good conversation that he gave to the room on this particular subject of attorney-client privilege. Okay, so for our audience, I just want to give away the 4 points, just the 4 points of what that means, okay? So he shared with us that the first criteria is there has to be communication, like I said, right? We have to be able to communicate these words, attorney-client privileged, right? But that's very broad and some people can misinterpret that. So he clarified, right? That point number 2 is that this communication must be between privileged persons, right? So it's that attorney and you as the provider who is the client, right? And then number 3, that communication must have been made in confidence between a client and the attorney. Okay, so that's a good specific point there as well. And then finally, he goes into step number four, is that that particular communication must have been made for the purpose of obtaining or providing legal assistance for the client. So those are the main elements of what that means, attorney-client privilege by the esteemed Robert Lyles. Yeah. And his hour-long conversation with us was profound and unforgettable. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I look at attorney-client privilege as a buffer when you do it that way, because if I give, let's say you or I do an audit on a practice and it really is not good, and we present that right to the practice, well, immediately right then they're under obligation to do something about it.
Right.
And the clock starts ticking because now they know.
Right away. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's going through attorney-client privilege, we give our results to the attorney.
The attorney.
Because actually we're the attorney is our client, not the practice at that point. Mm-hmm. So we give it to the attorney. The attorney goes through it and then kind of goes what has to be done, what steps need to be taken, and kind of gets everything together before it gets to the practice. So it gives that, not that it excuses and you can just ignore it, but at least you have that buffer there to where things are in motion and you're not looking for an attorney after you get this report and you're like, uh-oh, you know, and then you're trying to call people and you can't get some, and then all of a sudden everybody's all stressed out and it's a mess. Whereas if you use that in the first place, you know, it kind of goes through and goes around that. If you have practices, like I have some clients that now that they've been on this program with me for, a couple years, we don't do all their stuff through attorney-client privilege. They're just regular, their regular checks, and we know kind of the level they're at. So it's not that you do that forever and you do that with everything, but when you're going into something, especially if you've gotten letters and you're saying, okay, you need to go through attorney-client privilege. At least that's my opinion.
I agree with that opinion. When you receive that type of paperwork from the payer, it's always my best recommendation as well, is to get a qualified healthcare attorney on your side immediately. Yes. And don't just squirrel away the letter in a handbag for weeks on end and then finally find an attorney and give it to them like the day before the deadline.
The letter. That's never a good idea. It kind of puts you in a bad spot. So now we're all set with, we know what kind we're going to do. We've got attorney-client privilege if we're doing external. We got everything set up. The next question would be, what kind of audit now do we need to do? We want an audit. I'm like, what kind of an audit? And they're like, an audit. I'm like, I know, but what type of an audit? They're like, of our records. I'm like, yes, I understand that too. But, when they do audits, the first two types that I'll talk about, because the other thing, then you kind of go into subtypes after you figure the first thing out, is whether you want to do retrospective or prospective, right?
Right.
So retrospective is the normal, most often done way where you're looking at claims that have already been paid and things that have already been done. You're looking at the past. Now, which then feeds into your scope, because if you're looking at the past, you don't want to audit records from 2 years ago, because that's not going to do any good. But, do you want to do retrospectively, or do you want to do it prospectively, which is before the claim goes out the door? I have one client that I do prospective reviews on, and I do them. I check something for them daily. Because they want that assurance that, this stuff is good as we go. Now there's different camps of like one's better than the other, that if you do it prospective, you can fix something before it ever gets submitted, and then it goes out clean. That's really great. That's a really great point. Downside to that is, depending on the size of the practice, you know, that may take a little bit of a dump to your AR, right?
Right.
Because you have to hold stuff up until you get this stuff done.
That's right. You hold your cash flow is sort of at a halt in a prospective audit situation. Absolutely. I tend to see them used more for practices that have new service lines that they want to test out. They don't really know, right? There are new CPT codes that came out, new Category 3 codes that they want to check out, you know, and they don't really know. So I think that's a really good time where you can do a prospective thing and get someone's help involved to see, am I actually doing it correctly? Is it matching my documentation? Am I doing the right type of code selection on it, et cetera? Yeah. So, yeah.
I did have one client that was a pretty large client that did them prospectively, and they really bought into that. And so when it was time to do them, of course, we had to do them department by department because there was no way we could say, okay, hold the billing for 500. It's not doable. So we went department by department. And then even within the department, we had to group some of the physicians sometimes because they were a lot of them. So I'm like, okay, we're not going to do 20 of y'all at once because I don't want to hold your AR up like that. So we'd take, you know, 10 of them. And then with that, it wasn't just me doing it. I also had other people, and so that we would all do it. So we had a guaranteed turnaround time, you know, set to it, you know, of a week. So within a week, they would have it back. And that was as long as the thing was going to get held up.
Right.
You know, so if you do prospective, you know, those are extra things you need to kind of build in to that plan for the audit, because otherwise, you know, I've been to places too where they're like, well, you know, we're doing an audit. And I'm like, okay, when did this start? And I swear my hand to, you know, it started a year ago and they weren't done with the audit yet. So I'm like, you know, that's really not an audit.
That's not an audit. Yeah.
You know, by the time the results come, the codes changed.
The codes have changed. Know, I mean, right. It's been a full year.
You know, you have to have a start and a stop for an audit. You know, there should be a time frame in there that makes sense. If it just goes on and on, once again, if a payor is taking a look, like the OIG or CMS, it looks like you're just doing window dressing. Again, you're saying you're trying to walk the walk. Talk the talk, kind of, you're missing half of it, you know? So make sure there's some set in there of how that's going to be done. And then once you decide which one of those you want to do, then you want to look at whether it is random or targeted. And some people also call targeted focused. I was reading somewhere and I was like, oh, focus. Oh, okay. I always just call it targeted, but you know, whichever way, you know, that's,
thing. They're interchangeable terms.
So the targeted ones are the ones like we were talking about, like you want to check out modifier 25. You want to check out consultations. You want to check out level 4 and 5 services. You want to check out specific minor procedures, you know, where you're looking at a specific thing or focusing on one issue that's coming up. And those are kind of good ones to do, I think, like as an in-between thing when things pop up. Do you agree with that?
Completely agree with that. Absolutely. Right. And right now in 23, the beginning of the year, right, you and I could find plenty of things to focus on, to target in on, right, at the beginning of the year, because there's been so much change, right? 225 new CPT codes were added on January 1st. So there's a whole lot of targeting that you could do yourself to protect yourself.
Again,
preventive medicine, especially the GI stuff, the hernia codes. I mean, there's just so much stuff that we could want to just look at, you know, and make sure that we're doing things right, because there's been such a change. Now is a good time.
Yep. And to throw it up with a, since that popped in my head when you said it with the hernia codes, for those of y'all that are in that space, you know, make sure that you're checking since there's no longer a global package with those new codes, that if the when the physicians are seeing patients postoperatively, that you are reporting those services, because there's no package anymore for those services. So don't be leaving that on the table, because that's something else an auditor will find, what is not going correctly. But I always find, not every single time, but I always find, I usually find revenue that's missed.
That's right.
Or undercoding. I have physician that everything was a 3 because he didn't want to get in trouble. And I'm like, no, I said, you have to do it correctly. You know, wrong is wrong. Lower, higher, it doesn't matter. You know, and so worked with him. Now he's very much just doing it by patient. There's no more like one level.
Just across the board. Right.
So, yes. Right. So, there's also those kind of things that you may be missing that will be found on an audit. Where the random ones is just pulling things. And that's when I use RATSTATS. And do you use that software too, Sona?
That's the best time for RATSTATS, a clunky old program from the OIG. It's very clunky, but it is the most efficient way to find a random sample.
And I did put, I'll put it again since we're talking about it right now. I did put it in the chat, but I'll re-put it in the chat. Now RATSTATS, and what Sona was saying is correct. It's so funny when you download, it's free. Okay,
it's free.
You just go to this link and you just download the software at no charge. Mm-hmm. And when you do it, you can have it come right onto your desktop or your laptop. And, the icon thing for it is a big rat, and it's like a cartoon rat. And it's just really it's old, but that's what they use. That's what CMS uses. And
the
it's
government
like,
has
hey,
older programs. Yeah.
Yep. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right.
And they don't.
You can go on YouTube and there are videos.
There's
on
a
YouTube
tutorial
on how to use it and how to get different kind of samples from it. Right. What RATSTATS will do is allow you to put in the number of claims in the universe and, how many you want. And then it just pulls random numbers for you so that when you pick and pull charts that you are truly doing it randomly. Because what you don't want is a payor to be able to say you cherry picked these and only chose the best charts for this audit. You didn't, so you can say, no, it was a truly random audit. And every audit report I do, I put in that I use RATSTATS, to do my selection. So it was a truly random audit. But that's what I use the RATSTATS for. So yeah. And Annette said, now Annette saying it's great. I'm assuming Annette, that means you've used RATSTATS. Like I said, it's kind of cool. It does give you a nice thing. And so, and if you're doing them, and you're dialing in to the practices system, or whether you're having them pull charts for you, that way you can, put out the numbers, what you need, and, go ahead and get your audit started. Now, before we move into scope, which was the last thing for today, because remember, today's about planning the audit. Now, Sona and I were talking and what we decided, because, I know a lot of times people do things where they talk about audits and they kind of do it all in like the space of an hour, talk about the complete process. It's a pretty involved, big process. So, I look at it as the 3 compartmentalized pieces. You plan it, you do it, and then what do you do afterwards? Education and monitoring and all that kind of stuff. Sonal has agreed to come back with me, and we're going to do 2 more. So we'll do another one on the actual audit and then another one on post audit. So we'll have others for continuing on with the audit process. So be watching for those. And thank you, Sonal, for agreeing to come back with me to do it.
Absolutely, my friend.
So anything else on type of audit before we go to the scope?
No, I mean, I think you covered everything. I think it's just going to be a matter of individual practices choice, right, on what they're going to decide on, you know, do things before the claims go out the door or after they've already received their reimbursement, right? And definitely those focused, targeted, hot button items, have no fear. You should start looking at your data. I can't say that enough again and again, no. Right? Don't be scared. You need to isolate
those
and look
and run those frequency reports. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Be looking to see, you know, run and see what your curve is for things. And, you know, and I was reading something as far as the E&M side of things goes that they have noticed. And I think I even pushed it on LinkedIn, that shift over, you know, 2022 and that the shift is now moving over into fours, you know, into the higher level services.
Absolutely.
Some of it is that they've been doing those services, but they just haven't been coding properly for a long time either. It's not all, you know, the gaming and the whatever. It's right. Really, I think they've been doing the services and just not understanding and taking the proper credit for it.
Absolutely.
Are not hitting that one stupid box, that bullet, that one thing of the PFSH
one beam
or something.
I know.
You know, to where it's like, okay, you know, now you lost it. Yeah, that was the most frustrating thing for me was the admits for the hospital when it was clearly a three, the highest. Mm-hmm. Level, you know, I mean,
yes.
This is a really sick everything.
Yes,
and then they didn't
person.
Do a family history, or there wasn't a social history. I was just like,
terrible.
Oh my God.
Right. Yeah. And then the score
then
plummeted down. Yeah.
Yep.
It was horrendous.
I mean, so I'm glad, you know, that we are leaving it on MDM now or time, but you know, I think the focus is how it should be.
Since
we have that shift, you know, and that shift now, of course, is noticed by everybody, you know, meaning the payors. So, you know, run those reports and start checking on some of those things. You know, are you doing fives now where, you know, you really weren't doing that many before, you know, depending on your patient base, there's all mm-hmm. these factors that are going to go into that. But definitely the little spot checks, you know, always can be doing those, you know. All right. So scope of audit would be the last thing. And that's kind of, you know, just what it sounds like. You know, what do we want to look at? How many charts, how many records? I shouldn't say charts. I did have one client once when I said charts, he thought he could send me like 10 entire charts. I would audit the entire chart of that patient.
Oh, wow.
You know, for this amount of, I was like,
no.
You know, right. he's going to send me 10 charts that, you know, this is back in the paper chart days.
Of course.
Like, no, I'm not doing that.
Right.
So records. So
records. Right.
How many records do you want to do?
Claims. Right.
Yes.
Right.
And that reminded me when you just said claims, another little piece to not forget about, when you're doing this, with the scope here, is the scope going to be just the CPT coding, you know, like, or are we looking more expansively, or is it full revenue cycle too? I mean, you have to decide those things with your scope. When I do audits, and sometimes I will hear two differentiations in terms that get used by people. When they say audit, they're talking about a full revenue cycle audit. If they're doing less than that, that's when they'll start calling them reviews, like documentation reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, again, terminology, make sure you pay attention when you're talking to consultants about those kind of things. But when I do audits, reviews, whatever you want to call them, I do always ask for the 1500 forms. You know,
absolutely.
Every time. I want to see that and compare it. I look and check that everything matches when they're doing incident two services, who's on the claim form, you know, those kinds of things. I do look in the electronic record. We do dial in to our clients for a lot of them because they, mm-hmm. you know, nobody really sends stuff by paper anymore. Sometimes mm-hmm. they'll go and they'll download them and they'll send them to me that way.
Right.
But I always compare and make sure all the signatures are there. They're all electronically signed. They're all, you know, there are all these other things that you could be looking for. So I think your scope, like how big a scope are we looking at here for these audits, are we getting into, right?
Absolutely. You said that spot on. That's exactly how I've always addressed an audit in the work I've done for years. Absolutely. It is comprehensive. I even ask for EOBs, right? I want to make sure about the payments from the payer as well. So everything has to be provided to you in terms of the data that you need to get, right? And absolutely, it's the electronic age. If we're given access by our providers to their EHRs, that just makes it a bit easier for us to poke around and look at the patient scheduling, for example. We might need to look at that as well during the audit process.
Sometimes.
Or orders, right? So things like that, if we have access to their EMR, that could be easier. Otherwise, files can be downloaded, et cetera. When it comes to scope, that's how I see it as well. It is comprehensive. And then when you have clients that simply want a documentation review, again, I always implore them that I need that claims form. I need that CMS 1500 form alongside that documentation, right? To make sure that the documentation is actually the same reflection in that CPT or HCPCS code, right? So they still have to provide that extra piece as well. If they're looking at something from a CDI perspective, I still have to look at that claim form also.
Yeah, I have seen, because you will find a lot of times practices don't really look at the EOBs, and I've done audits before where I'm like, you know, the payer changed this, you know, like they'll change the level of the E&M or they add some, and I was like, that's not what you got paid for.
Right.
And the practice didn't even realize it was happening.
Correct.
Because people weren't checking. It was just, oh, here's a check. It goes in, and you know, they go on to the next one.
Right.
So you can pick up, and the next would be the sample size. Like, how many are you going to do?
Right.
Depending everybody, the standard, I would say is like 10 to 20, you
10.
Know?
Yeah. 10.
So my thing, I always pitch 20. It's not to try to, you know, pad my bill. It really is because when I look at it at the 10, I always think, okay, if they have 10 charts, 10 records, and there's something off on one or two of them, you know, they're already under what the government's compliance percentage that they're looking for is,
right?
You know,
right.
So I kind of look at it that way, that, you know, if you miss one, you're already failed. You know, and if you have more, it kind of gives you more of a cushion kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of places they go with 10. Or if you have a new physician or APP in the office, you might want to do a little bit more to see really what they know and what kind of education you need to give them.
For sure.
You know, and just looking at 10 charts might not do it, you know.
Totally agree.
Your sample size is usually around the same thing.
Exactly. So like you were saying, for a baseline type of an audit, I always request like 25 records, right? Because when you have somebody who's new, you need to see the variety of their services. So you need to ask for a little bit more. Absolutely. But in general, we have to work with our clients, right? That's what you and I do very well, is we work within the budget that we're given, right? That also plays a big factor onto the audit process. So if their budget is only, say, A, okay, then we're going to try and do our very best for the 10 records. But if their budget happens to be a bit higher at B, we can go ahead and ask for the 20 records. But all in all, it's incredibly important to work with the providers under their budget plan, right? For compliance for that quarter, for that year, et cetera. That's another big identifying factor in this type of work, is to make sure that everyone stays on their term. Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, you know, when people like Sonal and I, because I ask that too, when we ask about y'all's budget, it's not because we want to make sure we get every dime we can out of you.
No,
it's
to
make sure we can give you the most services
that's
that we can offer you at what's in your budget. So it's kind of like that same thing when they say, well, how much does the position pay? And nobody wants to tell you kind of thing. You know, it's like that kind of thing for us. And really, that's not why we're asking. But, you know, when we go and do the proposals and go through everything, you know, at least me, we put, this is the Cadillac. You're asking me for a proposal. I'm giving you the Cadillac of that's everything. And, you know, then there's like sticker shock. You know, but I always try to put in there, you know, now, of course, you know, this can always be scaled depending on your budget. Well, if I knew your budget to start with, you know, I would know kind of where we were sitting in there and what kind of things we could do. And sometimes I've had a place before that gave me a budget and I was under the, I didn't need all of the stuff they budgeted. So, you know, I was like, well, that's good. You could save it for the next time then, or, you know, then we did some education because they had budget left over. So we did some education services for the physicians and the staff. So, we're not trying to get in your pocketbooks. We really want to do whatever's best for the practice. And that gives us a metric to go by. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Great points.
All right. Do we have any, further questions in here? I don't know what that means. All right. Cause we are, ooh, look at that. See, 2:59.
Are we at time? Wow. Look at us. Awesome.
All right. Well,
fabulous.
Thanks for coming on again today, Sonal.
And it's my pleasure.
Patrick's Day, everybody.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Wear your green. So, yes.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Well, I am of a McVeigh lineage. So, we always know how to have a good time on, but they awesome. I'm glad the Pope, they gave special dispensation for tomorrow
for tomorrow.
Corned beef. Yes. Because St. Patrick's Day falls on Friday and, you know, they knew that it was going to be a problem for a lot of us Catholics. So you're allowed to eat it tomorrow. Mm. But join us, you know, be watching for the notice for Sonal to come back and for us to do our part two. And we still haven't forgotten about the part two for the E&M. So, you know,
we got
a kind of couple part twos in here, and then we'll have a third part for rounding out our audit series here. Thank you very much, Sonal. Any parting words for everybody?
No, this was great, Betty. Thank you so much for having me on. Hopefully everybody has a good idea about how to plan your audit.
And yes, just again, here is Sonal's LinkedIn for her company, SP Collaborative. And her podcast, Paint the Medical Picture. I will throw those in the, I will put those in the chat so that y'all have those. I was like, that doesn't sound good. put those in the chat so that y'all have access to them. So you can check those out with her. Anything while I'm doing that, because if I cut this off, they won't go in there. Anything new or anything that you want to convey to people on your company or your podcast?
Hopefully you guys will just keep supporting me on my podcast. I love it. The podcast. Can't wait to keep growing my little company and keep supporting my good friend here on this Healthcare Happenings. Love it.
All right, y'all. Well, thank you. And we will see you next time when we come in to see what is happening in healthcare. Thanks.
And finally, I focus season 8 Spark on creativity. I want this 8th season Spark to be filled with our world's thought leaders, writers, artists, philosophers, everyone who inspires the need for creativity in all we strive to do. So, in this week's inspiring quote in Spark is from the lead singer of the White Stripes, Jack White. Deadlines and things make you creative. Absolutely true, right? I think this is an amazing quote that reminds us that deadlines often push us to think about working smarter. not harder. I think this quote inspires us to think outside the box, outside the norm. We are reminded to use that creative part of ourselves to find better solutions. We do not need to stick to the status quo, the traditional way of doing things. I'm happy Jack White's spark still burns brightly in all of us today. So that wraps up today's episode. And as always, I appreciate you diving into today with me. If you want more information from me, please go ahead and follow me on LinkedIn. I'll leave links to everything in the show notes below. And please be sure to watch our Healthcare Happenings conversation on audit planning on Betty's YouTube channel. I've included that link in the show notes as well. Here's to an amazing week ahead. Remember to find time for yourselves somewhere in there as well. Take a weekend road trip. Get out into the city for some shopping and sightseeing. Plan a little wine tasting at home, or beer if that's your thing. Join a book club. Get all your friends together for an escape room adventure. The possibilities are endless. But just have some fun. Thank you all so much for listening in on today's very special episode. And I hope every week with me brings you closer to helping your providers paint a masterpiece. See you next Wednesday.